Cambridge International Examinations. International General Certificate of Secondary Education. June Examination Series 2017. English as a Second Language. Extended Tier. Listening Comprehension. Welcome to the exam. In a moment, your teacher is going to give out the question papers. When you get your paper, fill in your name, centre number and candidate number on the front page. Do not talk to anyone during the exam. If you would like the recording to be louder or quieter, tell your teacher now. The recording will not be stopped while you are doing the exam. Teacher, please give out the question papers. And when all the candidates are ready to start the test, please turn the recording back on. Now you are all ready, here is the exam. Questions 1 to 4. You will hear four short recordings. Answer each question on the line provided. Write no more than three words or a number for each detail. You will hear each recording twice. Question 1. A. When was Martin's birthday? B. What did Martin receive for his birthday?
Happy birthday, Martin. It was yesterday, wasn't it?
Thanks. Well, my party was yesterday. I thought Saturday would be easier for everybody to come for a party than Thursday, which was the actual day of my birthday. Anyway, the weekend's always better for celebrating, isn't it?
Yeah, you're right. So what did you get?
Well, you know, I really wanted a new guitar, but I was expecting my parents to buy me something like a bike or a laptop.
So what was it in the end? Let me guess. The laptop.
Well, to my surprise, I got what I was hoping for.
Never! I must come round and see it. Happy birthday, Martin. It was yesterday, wasn't it?
Thanks. Well, my party was yesterday. I thought Saturday would be easier for everybody to come for a party than Thursday, which was the actual day of my birthday. Anyway, the weekend's always better for celebrating, isn't it?
Yeah, you're right. So what did you get?
Well, you know, I really wanted a new guitar, but I was expecting my parents to buy me something like a bike or a laptop.
So what was it in the end? Let me guess. The laptop.
Well, to my surprise, I got what I was hoping for.
Never! I must come round and see it.
Question 2. A. What can Mr. Jones collect from the garage? B. What time does the garage usually open?
This is a message for Mr. Jones from the Hall Green Garage. Unfortunately, your car needs more work doing, as we found another problem with the brakes. This means it won't be ready until next week. Your motorbike has now been fixed and can be picked up whenever you're ready. Oh, and just to let you know, we're not open till 11 a.m. all this week. Then we'll be back to our normal hours from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. If you have any questions, please call us on 0121 655 802. Thanks. This is a message for Mr. Jones from the Hall Green Garage. Unfortunately, your car needs more work doing, as we found another problem with the brakes. This means it won't be ready until next week. Your motorbike has now been fixed and can be picked up whenever you're ready. Oh, and just to let you know, we're not open till 11 a.m. all this week. Then we'll be back to our normal hours from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. If you have any questions, please call us on 0121 655802. Thanks.
Question 3. A. Where is the girl going on holiday this year? B. What does the girl still need to buy before her holiday?
I can't wait for the summer holiday this year.
Same here.
We're off to the Swiss mountains to do some hiking, which will make a nice change to sunbathing by the sea.
I thought you'd mentioned Japan.
That's not till next year. By the way, is it okay to borrow your camera? It's so much better than mine.
Sure. And don't forget, you'll need proper walking boots.
I've already bought some. Now all I want is a backpack. I think I'll get one online. I've seen some really good deals.
Good idea.
I can't wait for the summer holiday this year.
Same here.
We're off to the Swiss mountains to do some hiking, which will make a nice change to sunbathing by the sea.
I thought you'd mentioned Japan.
That's not till next year. By the way, is it okay to borrow your camera? It's so much better than mine.
Sure. And don't forget, you'll need proper walking boots.
I've already bought some. Now all I want is a backpack. I think I'll get one online. I've seen some really good deals.
Good idea.
Question 4. A. How long will the Italian cafe be closed for? B. What is new on the menu at Sunny Juice Bar?
Welcome to the Pavilion Shopping Centre. We'd like to inform our visitors that the music store Groove Records will welcome its customers once again in 1 week's time, after being closed for a month. Due to redecoration, the Italian cafe is shutting for 5 days, starting on Wednesday. We'd like to apologise for any inconvenience this may cause. Sunny Juice Bar on the first floor remains open for business as usual and is expanding its menu. As well as the usual smoothies and their popular freshly squeezed fruit juices, you'll now be able to enjoy vegetable juices too. So why not go and try some? Welcome to the Pavilion Shopping Centre. We'd like to inform our visitors that the music store Groove Records will welcome its customers once again in 1 week's time, after being closed for a month. Due to redecoration, the Italian cafe is shutting for 5 days, starting on Wednesday. We'd like to apologise for any inconvenience this may cause. Sunny Juice Bar on the first floor remains open for business as usual and is expanding its menu. As well as the usual smoothies and their popular freshly squeezed fruit juices, you'll now be able to enjoy vegetable juices too. So why not go and try some?
That is the end of the 4 short recordings. In a moment, you will hear question 5. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Question 5. You will hear a talk given by a scientist about a dinosaur called the Stegosaurus. Listen to the talk and complete the sentences below. Write 1 or 2 words or a number in each gap. You will hear the talk twice.
In the past decade, we've seen an increased interest in dinosaurs, mainly thanks to films like Jurassic World. The Stegosaurus dinosaur, the topic of today's talk, was not one of the largest dinosaurs roaming the Earth around 150 million years ago, but it was certainly one of the most unusual-looking ones. Their most recognisable feature was the line of bony plates sticking up along its back. We're still not sure what the exact function of these plates was, but the current thinking suggests they were used as temperature control, rather than for protection or even defence. The plates may have looked threatening to other creatures, but they would break under too much pressure as they were made of relatively soft, bony material. Another feature of the Stegosaurus was the spikes at the end of its tail. The number of these differed from one type of Stegosaurus to another. The length of the spikes changed with age, but from the remains found, they were on average between 60 and 90 centimetres long. The Stegosaurus wasn't the brightest creature. Its brain was very tiny and could be compared to the size of a walnut, unlike the average human brain, which is similar in size to a small melon. The Stegosaurus was quite widespread, living in what is now known as South Africa, Western Europe, and in some parts of Asia, which can be seen from the discoveries of its bones in these locations. However, not as many have been found in any of these places as in North America, where the first ever discovery of Stegosaurus remains was also made in 1876. A relatively complete skeleton wasn't found for over a century, until 1992, in fact. But that discovery was beaten when a virtually entire one was dug up in 2003, and it has been on display in the Natural History Museum in London since 2014. This exhibit was given the name Sophie. When it comes to naming new dinosaur exhibits, some museums ask the public to think of a name, for example, based on a friend or favourite cartoon character. The latest dinosaur edition at the Natural History Museum, however, was named after the daughter of a banker. The banker had helped the museum to purchase the skeleton by donating a generous amount of money. When Sophie's bones arrived at the museum, everyone was very excited because she was the first Stegosaurus the museum had obtained. Before she was put on permanent public display, the scientists at the museum took photos of each bone to construct a very accurate 3D digital model of the entire skeleton. All this data will assist them in finding out things like Sophie's weight and how fast she could walk. The next stage for the museum team was to put the real skeleton together. Sophie can now be admired in the Earth Hall of the museum. You'd never guess her delicate skull had been replaced by a copy and stored safely away. She's positioned on a small stage just inside the entrance with her tail up, body lowered, and open jaws pointing at arriving visitors.
Now you will hear the talk again.
In the past decade, we've seen an increased interest in dinosaurs, mainly thanks to films like Jurassic World. The Stegosaurus dinosaur, the topic of today's talk, was not one of the largest dinosaurs roaming the Earth around 150 million years ago, but it was certainly one of the most unusual-looking ones. Their most recognisable feature was the line of bony plates sticking up along its back. We're still not sure what the exact function of these plates was, but the current thinking suggests they were used as temperature control, rather than for protection or even defence. The plates may have looked threatening to other creatures, but they would break under too much pressure as they were made of relatively soft, bony material. Another feature of the Stegosaurus was the spikes at the end of its tail. The number of these differed from one type of Stegosaurus to another. The length of the spikes changed with age, but from the remains found, they were on average between 60 and 90 centimetres long. The Stegosaurus wasn't the brightest creature. Its brain was very tiny and could be compared to the size of a walnut, unlike the average human brain, which is similar in size to a small melon. The Stegosaurus was quite widespread, living in what is now known as South Africa, Western Europe, and in some parts of Asia, which can be seen from the discoveries of its bones in these locations. However, not as many have been found in any of these places as in North America, where the first ever discovery of Stegosaurus remains was also made in 1876. A relatively complete skeleton wasn't found for over a century, until 1992, in fact. But that discovery was beaten when a virtually entire one was dug up in 2003, and it has been on display in the Natural History Museum in London since 2014. This exhibit was given the name Sophie. When it comes to naming new dinosaur exhibits, some museums ask the public to think of a name, for example, based on a friend or favourite cartoon character. The latest dinosaur edition at the Natural History Museum, however, was named after the daughter of a banker. The banker had helped the museum to purchase the skeleton by donating a generous amount of money. When Sophie's bones arrived at the museum, everyone was very excited because she was the first stegosaurus the museum had obtained. Before she was put on permanent public display, the scientists at the museum took photos of each bone to construct a very accurate 3D digital model of the entire skeleton. All this data will assist them in finding out things like Sophie's weight and how fast she could walk. The next stage for the museum team was to put the real skeleton together. Sophie can now be admired in the Earth Hall of the museum. You'd never guess her delicate skull had been replaced by a copy and stored safely away. She's positioned on a small stage just inside the entrance with her tail up, body lowered, and open jaws pointing at arriving visitors.
That is the end of the talk. In a moment you will hear question 6. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Question 6. You will hear 6 people talking about television. For each of speakers 1 to 6, choose from the list A to G which opinion each speaker expresses. Write the letter in the appropriate box. Use each letter only once. There is one extra letter which you do not need to use. You will hear the recordings twice. Speaker 1.
I know that a lot of people these days watch too much TV and it can be quite addictive. Some of my friends spend most of their free time watching films, which is so easy to do with all the extra channels. It's also quite expensive since they need to pay for them. I get home relatively late and that's the only time I can watch a bit of TV. My job's rather stressful, so I look forward to switching on the TV and just chilling out.
Speaker 2.
Is it just me, or is the quality of TV programmes really poor these days? I don't mean to sound negative, but most evenings I can't find anything interesting to watch, even though I enjoy all sorts of programmes. But I really can't see the point of these reality shows. Why would a person of my age want to watch what ordinary people or celebrities do every day? I might have found that exciting 20 years ago, but these days I'm after something more serious that targets adult audiences.
Speaker 3.
My mum is always complaining that I watch far too much TV, but I don't just watch anything. Each week I look at the TV listings in detail and spend some time circling all the programmes that interest me. I love documentaries especially, because you can find out so much about things like science or geography, which is very useful for my school studies too. This means that I enjoy myself and learn new things at the same time.
Speaker 4. Speaker 4.
Some years ago, I started watching this series about spies and really got into it. By the end of the first series, I couldn't wait for the second to start. I kept checking the internet to see when it was coming out. You can imagine my disappointment when it was shown on a channel which they charge for. TV channels get so much money from advertising. Just think how many commercials there are in an hour. So why do we need to spend money to see our favourite TV programmes?
Speaker 5.
Nowadays I go on lots of business trips, so I don't spend as much time at home anymore. That's why a couple of years ago I started to stream films off the internet and watch news updates online. Like that, I can watch what I want, whenever. I'm not really sure why I still keep a TV set at home when all I need is my tablet, but then when my parents come round, they still prefer the traditional way. For them, it's a way to take it easy after a busy day.
Speaker 6.
I'm studying history, which means I need to learn a lot of facts. The thing is, I don't really like reading, so I rely heavily on TV to get as much information as possible. I normally watch the History Channel or other similar channels in the evening before going to bed, but just as I'm getting into a programme, there are all these interruptions with adverts promoting all sorts of things. So in the meantime, I check my emails, brush my teeth, but when I come back, they're still on. Unbelievable!
Now you will hear the six speakers again. Speaker 1.
I know that a lot of people these days watch too much TV and it can be quite addictive. Some of my friends spend most of their free time watching films, which is so easy to do with all the extra channels. It's also quite expensive since they need to pay for them. I get home relatively late and that's the only time I can watch a bit of TV. My job's rather stressful, so I look forward to switching on the TV and just chilling out.
Speaker 2.
Is it just me, or is the quality of TV programmes really poor these days? I don't mean to sound negative, but most evenings I can't find anything interesting to watch, even though I enjoy all sorts of programmes. But I really can't see the point of these reality shows. Why would a person of my age want to watch what ordinary people or celebrities do every day? I might have found that exciting 20 years ago, but these days I'm after something more serious that targets adult audiences.
Speaker 3.
My mum is always complaining that I watch far too much TV, but I don't just watch anything. Each week I look at the TV listings in detail and spend some time circling all the programmes that interest me. I love documentaries especially, because you can find out so much about things like science or geography, which is very useful for my school studies too. This means that I enjoy myself and learn new things at the same time.
Speaker 4.
Some years ago, I started watching this series about spies and really got into it. By the end of the first series, I couldn't wait for the second to start. I kept checking the internet to see when it was coming out. You can imagine my disappointment when it was shown on a channel which they charge for. TV channels get so much money from advertising. Just think how many commercials there are in an hour. So why do we need to spend money to see our favourite TV programmes?
Speaker 5.
Nowadays I go on lots of business trips, so I don't spend as much time at home anymore. That's why a couple of years ago I started to stream films off the internet and watch news updates online. Like that I can watch what I want, whenever. I'm not really sure why I still keep a TV set at home when all I need is my tablet, but then when my parents come round, they still prefer the traditional way. For them it's a way to take it easy after a busy day.
Speaker 6.
I'm studying history, which means I need to learn a lot of facts. The thing is, I don't really like reading, so I rely heavily on TV to get as much information as possible. I normally watch the History Channel or other similar channels in the evening before going to bed, but just as I'm getting into a programme, there are all these interruptions with adverts promoting all sorts of things. So in the meantime, I check my emails, brush my teeth, but when I come back, they're still on. Unbelievable!
That is the end of question 6. In a moment, you will hear question 7. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Question 7. You will hear a journalist talking to a singer called Jamie Watson. Listen to the interview and look at the questions. For each question, choose the correct answer, A, B, or C, and put a tick in the appropriate box. You will hear the interview twice.
We're very excited today because music legend Jamie Watson from rock group Luna is here. Jamie, can you tell us how you got to know the other members?
Well, we all used to live not far from each other as kids, which we only found out once we were already playing together. Apparently, two of us even worked in the same supermarket one summer. But it wasn't until we'd all finished at university that one day we happened to be in the same queue, each waiting for our turn in the first round of a musical talent show in London. None of us got through, but as we were talking, we all realised we were all into rock and fancied trying it out as a band.
Interesting. So how was it starting out?
I must say, our lack of experience showed. Looking back, we needed somebody in charge who could have given us an objective opinion and arranged meetings with important people in the music industry. We got that sorted eventually. Anyway, we used to play in various clubs round town. We never earned much, but that didn't bother us, as we really enjoyed it. We didn't have one fixed place to rehearse. One day it'd be somebody's garage, the next a cellar.
So wasn't your first big break the song Here We Come?
Actually, that was our second hit. That song appeared in a movie, which made it an overnight sensation. The one we'd written previously, called Take Four, was about our experiences as young musicians. It was quite lively and was also used in some radio ads.
Now, tell me about the band's name, Luna.
Well, one idea was to use the name of the town where we came from. When we put it down on paper, it looked a bit long and, to be honest, it didn't look all that special. Another idea we almost went for was to use the name of a comic, which we all loved reading when we were teenagers. Then I was scribbling down different combinations of our names, and it occurred to me that we could use the first letter from each of them. And that's what stuck.
You performed live here in the UK and abroad. What was it like being on tour?
We knew that home audiences liked our songs from their reactions at concerts, but we had no idea how we were going to be accepted abroad. When our world tour started, we'd never been outside the UK, so we thought of it as one big holiday. Getting off the plane, we were always amazed by the number of crowds who came to greet us, which was what made it for us.
So why did it all end so suddenly?
Well, losing creativity affects many musicians, and we were no exception. Other groups at the time fell apart when a member decided to go it alone. But we always got on really well and hardly ever had any disagreements as a group. It was a difficult decision to make.
But now you've decided to give the group another try.
Well, we kept in touch after the split. When we missed each other's company, we just met up occasionally and played a couple of our old songs for fun. Then, one day, we got a call to ask if we'd be interested in getting together for a concert to raise money for a good cause. After accepting the offer, we thought we should make the band a professional commitment again. In fact, we're even writing some new songs together, which will feature on our new album.
And is it difficult performing again after so many years?
As a lead singer, you need lots of energy on stage. And to make sure I can cope, I've started jogging. The other members like to take it easy. I shouldn't say this, but we only go over the songs once or twice, and actually, that's all it takes.
Well, we wish you all the best.
Now you will hear the interview again.
We're very excited today because music legend Jamie Watson from rock group Luna is here. Jamie, can you tell us how you got to know the other members?
Well, we all used to live not far from each other as kids, which we only found out once we were already playing together. Apparently, two of us even worked in the same supermarket one summer. But it wasn't until we'd all finished at university that one day we happened to be in the same queue, each waiting for our turn in the first round of a musical talent show in London. None of us got through, but as we were talking, we all realised we were all into rock and fancied trying it out as a band.
Interesting. So how was it starting out?
I must say our lack of experience showed. Looking back, we needed somebody in charge who could have given us an objective opinion and arranged meetings with important people in the music industry. We got that sorted eventually. Anyway, we used to play in various clubs round town. We never earned much, but that didn't bother us, as we really enjoyed it. We didn't have one fixed place to rehearse. One day it'd be somebody's garage, the next a cellar.
So wasn't your first big break the song Here We Come?
Actually, that was our second hit. That song appeared in a movie, which made it an overnight sensation. The one we'd written previously, called Take Four, was about our experiences as young musicians. It was quite lively and was also used in some radio ads.
Now, tell me about the band's name, Luna.
Well, one idea was to use the name of the town where we came from. When we put it down on paper, it looked a bit long and, to be honest, it didn't look all that special. Another idea we almost went for was to use the name of a comic, which we all loved reading when we were teenagers. Then I was scribbling down different combinations of our names, and it occurred to me that we could use the first letter from each of them. And that's what stuck.
You performed live here in the UK and abroad. What was it like being on tour?
We knew that home audiences liked our songs from their reactions at concerts, but we had no idea how we were going to be accepted abroad. When our world tour started, we'd never been outside the UK, so we thought of it as one big holiday. Getting off the plane, we were always amazed by the number of crowds who came to greet us, which was what made it for us.
So Why did it all end so suddenly?
Well, losing creativity affects many musicians, and we were no exception. Other groups at the time fell apart when a member decided to go it alone. But we always got on really well and hardly ever had any disagreements as a group. It was a difficult decision to make.
But now you've decided to give the group another try.
Well, we kept in touch after the split. When we missed each other's company, we just met up occasionally and played a couple of our old songs for fun. Then, one day, we got a call to ask if we'd be interested in getting together for a concert to raise money for a good cause. After accepting the offer, we thought we should make the band a professional commitment again. In fact, we're even writing some new songs together, which will feature on our new album.
And is it difficult performing again after so many years?
As a lead singer, you need lots of energy on stage. And to make sure I can cope, I've started jogging. The other members like to take it easy. I shouldn't say this, but we only go over the songs once or twice, and actually, that's all it takes.
Well, we wish you all the best.
That is the end of question 7. In a moment, you will hear question 8. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Question 8, Part A. You will hear a journalist called Paul Hamilton giving a talk about the Bajau people who live in Southeast Asia. Listen to the talk and complete the sentences in Part A. Write one or two words only in each gap. You will hear the talk twice.
Thank you for coming to today's talk about a fascinating ethnic group, the Bajau people who live in Southeast Asia and are believed to be the last marine nomads in the world. I spent some time living with a group of Bajau people to make a documentary. These days, most of the Bajau live in small huts built on coral reefs, but I was lucky enough to stay on a houseboat, which is the way most of the Bajau lived for centuries. It wasn't exactly the height of luxury, but I was comfortable enough. Spending time with a Bajau family was quite an experience, and naturally I had to overcome a lot of obstacles. For example, the early starts. Getting up before sunrise to go fishing with the men was a bit tricky, but it was interesting how many different types of seafood we caught. All this was then turned into fish soup, which really took some getting used to for breakfast, and I much preferred it when we had rice cakes instead. The Bajau people have adapted over time to their aquatic lifestyle. Before leaving home, I'd looked into this and learnt that spending so much time beneath the seas, often at significant depths, means many have problems with their hearing. What I hadn't anticipated discovering was how strong their underwater vision is, twice as strong as many Europeans, according to some research. Every Bajau community has a chief. The chief of the group I was documenting made me feel very welcome, and he told me all about his people and their background. He recounted a legend about why the Bajau started to roam the seas many centuries ago. I'd originally wondered if it was to look for a treasure chest containing gold. Apparently they were in search of a lost princess who'd been swept into the sea, and her father, the king, ordered the Bajau people to bring her back. Another thing I found out was that over time, the Bajau people gained invaluable knowledge of the sea, which led to better trade routes being set up. Nevertheless, protection from pirate attacks was hard to deal with, and weak defences meant that they remained a constant threat. The Bajau's connection with their natural surroundings has always been central to their existence. All in all, they love being at sea. Before I share some more facts about the Bajau people, does anyone have any questions?
Now you will hear the talk again.
Thank you for coming to today's talk about a fascinating ethnic group, the Bajau people who live in Southeast Asia and are believed to be the last marine nomads in the world. I spent some time living with a group of Bajau people to make a documentary. These days, most of the Bajau live in small huts built on coral reefs, but I was lucky enough to stay on a houseboat, which is the way most of the Bajau lived for centuries. It wasn't exactly the height of luxury, but I was comfortable enough. Spending time with a Bajau family was quite an experience, and naturally I had to overcome a lot of obstacles. For example, the early starts. Getting up before sunrise to go fishing with the men was a bit tricky, but it was interesting how many different types of seafood we caught. All this was then turned into fish soup, which really took some getting used to for breakfast, and I much preferred it when we had rice cakes instead. The Bajau people have adapted over time to their aquatic lifestyle. Before leaving home, I'd looked into this and learnt that spending so much time beneath the seas, often at significant depths, means many have problems with their hearing. What I hadn't anticipated discovering was how strong their underwater vision is. Twice as strong as many Europeans, according to some research. Every Bajau community has a chief. The chief of the group I was documenting made me feel very welcome, and he told me all about his people and their background. He recounted a legend about why the Bajau started to roam the seas many centuries ago. I'd originally wondered if it was to look for a treasure chest containing gold. Apparently, they were in search of a lost princess who'd been swept into the sea, and her father, the king, ordered the Bajau people to bring her back. Another thing I found out was that over time, the Bajau people gained invaluable knowledge of the sea, which led to better trade routes being set up. Nevertheless, protection from pirate attacks was hard to deal with, and weak defences meant that they remained a constant threat. The Bajau's connection with their natural surroundings has always been central to their existence. All in all, they love being at sea. Before I share some more facts about the Bajau people, does anyone have any questions?
Question 8, Part B. Now listen to a conversation between two students about the Bajau and freediving, and complete the sentences in Part B. Write one or two words only in each gap. You will hear the conversation twice.
Hi, Marco. Come on in.
Hi, Naisha.
Thanks for coming, Marco, and helping me out with the presentation on the Bajau divers. Did you find out more about them?
Yeah, don't worry.
Brilliant. What shall I start the presentation with? What do you think?
How about a short video clip of a Bajau diver in action?
Sounds good.
I've found one for you, actually. It shows a diver before his dive and how he focuses on breathing. He needs to get into a relaxed state before he jumps in. Then you can see the same diver walking on the seabed. He looked so graceful. He resembled a ballet dancer, I thought. Nothing like a scuba diver with flippers on who looks more like a mermaid. You've got to see the clip.
You bet I will. Now, I also found some photos which might be interesting to look at. Then I can talk about the equipment they use, like spears, and some of them also use goggles. They'd be worth mentioning. The frames are quite different from the ones we use, made of plastic or silicon. Theirs are carved from driftwood by hand. The lenses are glass or plastic, I think.
I see. So, when they're not diving, how do they protect themselves from direct sunlight? It must be really strong. Do you reckon they use sun lotion like we do?
You won't believe this, but it's rice dust which they rely on. Can you imagine spreading that over your face? I assumed they'd use something like mud.
Now, what about if you add some general information about freediving to your presentation? You know, in case someone wants to do a course.
That's not a bad idea. Didn't you do a course once?
Yes, and I'm quite good at diving, actually. First, you have to train in a swimming pool with an instructor. And when the instructor feels confident enough that you can manage the real thing, they let you dive on your own in the sea. I've already done a few dives, exploring coral reefs, but exploring a shipwreck is my dream. The one I have in mind is near an underwater cliff. It looks awesome.
Wow. So what does it take to become a freediver?
Well, there are a few things. Lung capacity helps, of course. Mind control is crucial, though. That can't be overlooked. And as for physical fitness, that also plays a part to a certain extent.
Thanks, Marco. You've been so helpful.
Now you will hear the conversation again.
Hi, Marco. Come on in.
Hi, Naisha.
Thanks for coming, Marco, and helping me out with the presentation on the Bajau divers. Did you find out more about them?
Yeah, don't worry.
Brilliant. What shall I start the presentation with? What do you think?
How about a short video clip of a Bajau diver in action?
Sounds good.
I found one for you, actually. It shows a diver before his dive and how he focuses on breathing. He needs to get into a relaxed state before he jumps in. Then you can see the same diver walking on the seabed. He looked so graceful. He resembled a ballet dancer, I thought. Nothing like a scuba diver with flippers on who looks more like a mermaid. You've got to see the clip.
You bet I will. Now, I also found some photos which might be interesting to look at. Then I can talk about the equipment they use, like spears, and some of them also use goggles. They'd be worth mentioning. The frames are quite different from the ones we use, made of plastic or silicon. Theirs are carved from driftwood by hand. The lenses are glass or plastic, I think.
I see. So, when they're not diving, how do they protect themselves from direct sunlight? It must be really strong. Do you reckon they use sun lotion like we do?
You won't believe this, but it's rice dust which they rely on. Can you imagine spreading that over your face? I assumed they'd use something like mud.
Now, what about if you add some general information about freediving to your presentation? You know, in case someone wants to do a course.
That's not a bad idea. Didn't you do a course once?
Yes, and I'm quite good at diving, actually. First, you have to train in a swimming pool with an instructor. And when the instructor feels confident enough that you can manage the real thing, they let you dive on your own in the sea. I've already done a few dives, exploring coral reefs, but exploring a shipwreck is my dream. The one I have in mind is near an underwater cliff. It looks awesome.
Wow. So what does it take to become a freediver?
Well, there are a few things. Lung capacity helps, of course. Mind control is crucial, though. That can't be overlooked. And as for physical fitness, that also plays a part to a certain extent.
Thanks, Marco. You've been so helpful.
That is the end of question 8 and of the exam. In a moment, your teacher will collect your papers. Please check that you have written your name, centre number and candidate number on the front of your question paper. Remember, you must not talk until all the papers have been collected. Teacher, please collect all the papers.